pod side of the virtual hardwood, it's the NLSC podcast. This is episode 508. I am Andrew, Andrew in our forum, Andrew NLSC on X. With me as always, my co-host Derek, DV3 in our forum, and DV3G and DV384 on X. Derek, we are recording this on Christmas Eve, my time, Christmas Eve, your time, if people want to call that a thing. And it's also going to be going out on Boxing Day, so this is definitely our Christmas episode for 2023. To that end, just want to start out by wishing you and all of our listeners a Merry Christmas and Happy Holiday season.
Yeah, Happy Holidays to all of our listeners, and thank you for supporting the NLSC and all of our content, and, you know, creating content that we also enjoy viewing, Andrew. You know, whether it be your YouTube videos, the clips you share on X, you know, the mods that are being released and discussed over on the NLSC website. We love the community, and, you know, we love your participation in the top 10 plays of the week. We love the basketball conversations that you start and take part in on the NLSC Discord. Just, I have nothing but great things to say about the community. So thank you once again for another stellar year.
100%. It has been a very fun year. We've both done a lot of fun video content. My articles have continued throughout the year. We're going to be doing some end of year best of editor's picks. I'm bringing this up to you on air, Derek. We haven't actually discussed this yet, but I was thinking we could pick our articles and our best videos and some of our favorite top tens as well. We'll be sharing that with the community, and maybe looking back at some March Madness stuff. We'll do a bit of end of year stuff. But yes, thank you so much for supporting us throughout the year. And we did unfortunately miss last week. We'd have a show last week. My computer, my old gaming desktop, gave up the ghost. As I said in when I recorded that message, we unfortunately lost about half of last week's episode, maybe slightly more than half, or the previous week's episode, I should say. But back in business now, brand new computer, Derek, just in time for Christmas.
But that 39-minute episode was epic, Andrew.
Of course.
Let's be honest. No, but seriously, I was sad to hear that your hard drive went and that you needed to get a new rig. But, you know, we've had some conversations about this new PC, and you love it. The specs are better. It's faster. It was easy to set up. You have all your apps on there now, and you have your Elgato set up and everything. So it seems like it was kind of a blessing in disguise, and maybe overdue, because I know you had been hanging on to that computer for a long time and you've had to fix it multiple times. Maybe it was time for an upgrade, and, you know, you were able to give yourself a Christmas present.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was thinking about upgrading for a while. If nothing else, getting an SSD, cloning the old hard drive onto the SSD to get that speed up, because obviously that is a much faster boot drive to have, SSD over the old HDD. So that was something I was looking at doing, and then it did crash, so that kind of forced my hand. I looked at fixing it up. I had a spare drive just to try a bit of troubleshooting. It still didn't seem to be working very well, so I decided, you know what, the better investment moving forward is a new PC. This is what I would tell my customers. I am a computer repairman by trade, IT and computer services. I would tell my customers, if you have an 8-year-old machine that's crashed a couple of times, been upgraded a few times, and you're in the market for a new one anyway, been thinking about it, then that is the way to go. So take my own advice, move a few things around financially, and yeah, so we have this fantastic new PC. It is what they call a mid-level gaming machine. It's a i5-9400F. So ninth generation i5, better than the i5 I had before. 32 gig of RAM, 1 terabyte SSD, additional 2 terabyte HDD for extra storage. 6 gigabyte 1660 Super NVIDIA GeForce card. So yeah, those are the specs for my fellow gamers and computer geeks out there. And very nice upgrade indeed.
I wasn't prepared for you to read off the specs, but I was going to ask you to do so. If you didn't. And the reason is because there are a lot of people out there that are interested in getting into PC gaming and or have an old rig and are looking to upgrade.
Absolutely. Right?
And so I found that in my probably in the last 9 years or so, 9 or 10 years or so, with the NLSC community, there has been threads created, you know, conversation about it on the Discord. We get asked sometimes on X, etc. You know, what are you guys gaming on? You know, what's your rig like? You know, what's working for you? So just to let people know, this is the PC that I use, my main PC. I use a CyberPower PC with an AMD Ryzen 7 3700X processor, 16 gigabytes of memory, with a AMD Radeon RX 5700 XT graphics card. I have a 2 terabyte NVMe hard drive, also a 2 terabyte standard hard drive, and a 240 gigabyte solid state drive in there as well. And I love my PC, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know that I'm able to run, you know, all the newest titles and the retro titles. And I'm on Windows 10, which also makes that a little bit easier as well.
I should mention I'm also on Windows 10 as well.
You were able to get it? You were able to get one with Windows 10?
Yeah, no, it was and also an optical drive as well. So I've got DVD RW on there as
Wait a minute. I didn't get the optical drive. I had to do an external USB.
Yeah, I shopped around, yeah. Drive. And I also, because this was supposed to come with Windows 11, and I contacted them. I can build computers, but I, for the sake of getting one quickly and warrantying everything from somebody else, I decided to buy from a place down in Sydney. And I said to them, look, I'm a tech, I can install Windows 10. Would you be willing to sell this without an operating system or put Windows 10 on instead of Windows 11, and I'll just upgrade at some point, maybe. Certainly not in the short term. And they said, look, no, we'll put Windows 10 on there for you instead. Great. I can't recommend them enough. Tech Junction down in Sydney. Any fellow Aussies listening to the show, I would definitely recommend them. They're on eBay as well. That's where I went through them, actually, to get their online store. So, yeah, they did that for me, and I couldn't be happier.
I did want to let people know that... So I bought my brother a new gaming computer for the holiday season. It has Windows 11 on it. And there was a lot of people saying that, you know, the classic games won't work. One of the games that he likes playing is Final Fantasy 11. This game came out in like 2001, right? And you can download this game on Steam and whatnot. But there's a lot of people that were saying that, you know, when you install Windows 11, or if you have a computer with Windows 11, that Final Fantasy 11 will not work. But it also goes to show that you can't always go by what you read on the internet. It works, you know, like Final Fantasy 11 works perfect on Windows 11 for him on this new PC. And he hasn't had any issues with some of the, you know, PS3 titles and whatnot that he's been playing on this new computer, you know, the PS3 titles, like, for example, like Devil May Cry and whatnot that you can download on Steam. But I want to point out that there is a cool thing that you can do with Windows 11. You can buy you can Google this. It's like a Windows 10 interface. I'm going to call it a mod, Andrew, but it's a Windows 10, like interface application. And what it does is I think I paid $5 for it for him, and I got it installed on his computer, and it basically turns his desktop and the taskbar and everything to as close to Windows 10 as they could get it. So it puts the search bar and the taskbar where it is on Windows 10, the start menu, all of that stuff. So I do recommend that for those who, you know, felt like they had to upgrade to Windows 11, or they got a computer with Windows 11 on it and whatnot. If you like the Windows 10 look and feel, I recommend Googling that application.
Yeah, they did the same thing for Windows 8. If you remember Windows 8 and 8.1, getting rid of the start menu, they actually released, again, for lack of a better word, mods that brought back the Windows 7, Windows Vista shell, and with the start menu and everything. So yeah, those are definitely worth looking into. Also, compatibility fixes and workarounds. Obviously, you and I have been playing games back to Live 2000, 2001, using the 3DFX wrapper, the Nglide wrapper, and things like that to get old games working. So it's always worth looking into these things, especially if you are into retro gaming. I am glad that I was able to get one with an internal optical drive. I did look for that specifically, knowing that I do swap discs a lot. I mean, you can use the external optical drive, as you do. I just wanted to keep a USB slot free, keep as many USB slots as free as possible, I suppose. But yeah, I'm very happy with it. It's I was looking into it, and it is a mid-level gaming PC, as I said, but apparently it will run 992 out of the top 1,000 games these days. Whatever you want to call the top 1,000, but whatever that metric is, it still runs everything pretty well.
Andrew, I've been told that my specs, and this was told to me by kind of PC snobs, right?
Yeah.
That my specs are also mid-level, but I run a game like Wild Hearts, which is a PS5 title on my PC, because it's also on Steam, and I run that at a very smooth, perfect 60 FPS.
Yeah.
At 1080p, and I play all of the modern titles. I play NBA 2K24 completely maxed out. I have had no issues running anything in amazing quality.
I mean, the gaming PC is powerful anyway, so even an entry level is pretty good. Mid level is
I just hate the whole mid level. What does mid level mean?
Well, mid like is
if
mid-level.
If mine's mid level, well, Andrew, if mine's mid level, but I can run everything, like in amazing quality, at a high resolution, like why does that make it mid? So I hate those conversations sometimes.
Sure. The word mid has been ruined as well by turning it into an insult, but I'm guessing if we had a
the only mid we like here, Andrew, is mid-range.
Of course, yeah.
Right? We like the mid-range.
Absolutely.
We love the mid.
You know, there's nothing wrong with being mid in that respect. And if you do have a top-tier, as I understand, a top-tier gaming machine, you can also control a rover on Mars. So there you go. But my apologies for the loss of that half of that episode to our listeners, and of course we couldn't record last week, but back in business and looking to head into 2024 nice and strong, Derek.
Yeah, and before we get into what was missed from that botched recording, which is basically Andrew and I are going to be going over, you know, some of our favorite players to watch in today's NBA, because we've both been watching quite a bit of NBA of the NBA this season, and then also a few of our favorite teams as well. How about that top 10? How about the holiday special top 10 plays of the week? I absolutely love the ankle breakers, the top two plays in that countdown, one by at a problem on NBA 2K24, and then the other by a new contributor to the top 10, KN Design. He messaged me these highlights from NBA 2K14 PC on the NLSC, so he DM'd me. And the ankle breakers were great. The poster dunks were absolutely excellent. There were 8 different basketball video games featured in that top 10. You were throwing it down with Santa. I was throwing it down with LeBron on NBA Live 16 using the Christmas jerseys, because Andrew and I did a Christmas jersey matchup on that game, because there's quite a few teams that have those jerseys as part of their jersey selection. We used the Cavs versus the Warriors. That game went right down to the wire. But the top 10 still going strong, and just some amazing contributions from the community.
I loved seeing that fantastic move in the rec, because you see a lot of people just spamming moves and not playing very good basketball. That was an excellent basketball move.
Yeah, and somebody commented that on the YouTube video. They said that move in the rec deserved that number 2 spot in the countdown, because it looked like real basketball.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the most of the time when you watch the rec footage, you know, people playing online and whatnot, it hardly resembles real basketball.
Yeah.
In fact, it's incredibly sloppy most of the time. But he legitimately, with real basketball moves, faked his defender out of his shoes and then smoked a mid-range jump shot. Shout out to at a problem on X. But yeah, I just love how, you know, the community continues to be interested in the top 10. And I also love the fact that I can have a little fun with it, right? We had our Christmas edition, and, you know, more than likely I will try to put together also a special New Year's edition.
And we had the Halloween special, of course, back in October.
Yeah, and that was a blast too. Just to let people know, there is a NLSC Top 10 Plays of the Week playlist on the NLSC YouTube. And so you can go on to the NLSC channel, click playlists, and you can find that compilation. And it's, Andrew, it's like 2.5 to 3 hours worth of highlights.
Almost 3 years worth.
You could just watch that on loop. I think it was Lookie the Gamer that said that. He goes, sometimes I just go on the NLSC channel, go into the playlist, and just like watch video after video.
Love it, yeah.
Of all the highlights.
And he's in there quite a bit as well. Lookie is in there a lot.
Yeah, usually with a putback dunk.
Of course. He's a putback king. You know, that's what he does. Absolutely. I loved seeing the live 2001 Legends getting into some other games as well. 2K9, I've been playing a bit of NCAA Basketball 09, of course. Actually, a little bit of NCAA March Madness 08. And I just want to put it out there. I don't mind Live 08 for PS3, 360. I might like it a little bit more than you do. But I feel like the college game is a bit more polished. Maybe I'm just imagining things. Maybe it's been too long. But
No. The March Madness 08 game is absolutely more solid gameplay-wise, in my opinion.
I'm not imagining it. Okay.
You're not imagining it. It feels like there's not as much crab movement. It feels like the movement, they cleaned it up a little bit. I feel like just the animation transitions are a little bit smoother.
Yep.
And I feel like the AI is more in tune.
Yeah.
Right.
I
feel
yeah.
like the AI is smarter. I feel like NBA Live 08 is often a snooze fest because of how the players move, how the AI reacts to, you know, what's going on the floor, how repetitive sometimes the gameplay feels. I agree. I spent some time with March Madness 08 and I was like, hey, this game is definitely the better 08 from EA Sports.
From EA, absolutely, for basketball that year. Unlocking the all-time teams, because of course they by default they have all the classic teams unlocked in 08, and of course they're in 09 as well. But 08 also has the all-time team, so I've been unlocking those, renaming some of the players there, playing with all-time North Carolina, of course, so I can put MJ and Vince Carter on the floor. That's fun, Derek.
I mean, you can't go wrong with that.
No.
I mean, there's still, it's still debatable who's the best in-game dunker of all time. I understand that the majority of fans, older and younger, to be honest with you, appear to prefer Vince Carter as the in-game dunker, as the best in-game dunker of all time. But I put together, I want to say it was a 2 minute and 20 second compilation, because that's what fits on X, Twitter at the time when I had posted it, of Jordan just absolutely posterizing everybody. It was 2 minutes and 20 seconds of Jordan just posterizing players. I think people forget how often he was putting opponents on posters, often multiple opponents, and how high he used to get up, you know, up until 92, 93, you know, before he retired. And then, you know, he was still throwing it down quite a bit.
He had a few,
you know, 95, 96 through 97, 98. But I have a trouble putting Vince Carter over Michael Jordan in the best in-game dunker conversation.
I think if I had to name my best, like a starting five of my favorite in-game dunkers, obviously you can then cheat a bit and have MJ and Vince and Dominic Wilkins. I'd probably put Derek Rose in there to have a guard, but also Shaq. Now, I know he's not the most spectacular, but man, is it fun to watch a Shaq attack.
What are your thoughts on the conversation I've seen had recently on who's more athletic, Russell Westbrook when, you know, he was in his prime and younger, or pre-injury Derek Rose?
That's tough. Like, how do you measure that? Do we have any numbers that possibly make it in any way objective? I mean, they're both explosive athletes, jumping out of the gym, making those explosive moves to the rim. You know, the way that Derek Rose could contort himself, maybe Derek Rose, but I mean, it's hard to pick against Westbrook at the same time. You go back and forth. Can you pick one?
Yeah, so for me, they're slightly different in the way that I think Westbrook has always been stronger than Derek Rose.
Mm.
I think that
he can bully, yeah.
He can bully, right? But I think that Derek Rose, as you stated, as far as like spectacular layups, as far as his coordination and his flexibility when he's around the rim and making moves and whatnot, is better than Westbrook. So it's like it's kind of like a give and take there. I think both are some of the quickest ever off the jump, you know, off the dribble, et cetera. It's tough. I think the thing that impresses me the most about those two players, and I think what sets them apart from almost every other point guard in basketball history in relation to throwing it down and just, you know, elevating is how quick they get off the floor.
Yeah.
It's some, they look like they can be going, I don't know, half speed towards the hoop. And then it's like a spring. All of a sudden they start, they skyrocket, right? They
jump Lamborghini 0 to 100. Yeah. And just,
it's
seconds.
So yeah. Fast. Like both of them, I've never seen anything like it. Those two, as far from the point guard position, are the best ever at that quick elevation. In that spring. And I think what's super impressive about Michael Jordan, being taller than both, obviously Jordan was 6'6", is that he had that spring, Andrew, but he was taller than both of them. So it looks ridiculous when Jordan does it as well. But sometimes you would see Jordan going towards the rim, you know, 92, 93 and prior, and he wouldn't look like he had enough speed to elevate the way that he did. But then all of a sudden he springs up into the air and his head is like an inch or two below the rim and he's throwing it down. So yeah, those guys blow me away with their athleticism.
And with MJ, of course, there's also the distance. There's that game, I'm sure you remember the highlight against the Suns, I want to say, where he just gets the steal and just sort of casually, almost casually trots up the court and then just takes off near the free throw line in a game. And, like, you don't think he's running fast enough or hard enough to get that momentum, but he just takes off.
Yeah. He, I don't know. I don't think it's debatable that he has the best hang time in basketball history.
He's Ed Jordan. I mean, come on. It's in the.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, the moves where he goes to the hoop and he jumps into a defender and it's like his body, like, gets suspended in the air and he finds a way to hang up there just for a couple seconds and contort his body and find some way to finish the play.
The Nets layup?
I've still never seen. Yeah. That Nets layup where he takes off from incredibly far out, dodges two defenders in the air and finishes it on the opposite side of the rim. It's just, I've never seen hang time like him. I've never seen coordination like him. And I think that, overall, as a basketball player, he's the most athletic that I've ever seen.
No wasted movements. That's fantastic skill, basketball IQ, athleticism. Yeah, you know, he's up there, obviously, to say the very least, to put it very mildly. Before we go on, a reminder that the NLSC podcast comes out every week on the NLSC, mb-live.com, as well as our YouTube channel. We're also on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other podcast apps. If you're listening on any of those apps, we'd greatly appreciate a review. To keep up with the show and everything we're doing with basketball gaming in general, connect with us on social media. On Twitter and Facebook, we are the NLSC. We also have an Instagram, NLSC Basketball, and on YouTube, we're youtube.com/NBA Live Series Center. Once again, visit us at NBA-Live.com, where in addition to the podcast, you'll also find all of our original content, as well as our forum and modding community. You know, you mentioned Derrick Rose, always fun to play with in video games as well, even a couple of years after his major injuries that did set him back in real life. We played with him, actually, in NBA Live 16. We played another game of Live 16 with the Christmas jerseys, and man, using Derrick Rose was really fun in that game. You had a fantastic crossover to a mid-range pull-up that looked satisfying. You said it felt really good, and it looked great, too.
So, we lost that game. And,
my bad on that
It's tough. I think that the biggest weakness in NBA Live 16 came out in that final possession. So we lost this game 65-64 against the Kobe-led Lakers. And this is a Lakers team that had Jordan Clarkson, Lou Williams, Larry Nance Jr., Roy Hibbert. Not the best Lakers team, but in NBA Live 16, they have shooters, they have slashers. Kobe played well. They have enough pieces, right? And on the final possession, we head up court. I think there's 10 seconds left in the game. And I pass the ball into Andrew, who's using Derrick Rose. He makes his way up court. He gets into the middle of the paint and decides to pass it out. When he passes it out, it goes to Jimmy Butler on the perimeter. And then the ball goes back into Rose. And when he passes it back to Rose, I'm using him and he's still in the paint. So I have to get out of there or I'm going to get 3 seconds.
Yeah.
So I start moving towards the mid-range in order to pull up for a game winner in a Derrick Rose area. Derrick Rose is a good mid-range shooter, right? We don't want him trying to take a 23-foot and out shot to try to win the game.
That three when I missed by one. That terrible brick that I had with him earlier in the quarter was indicative of that.
It didn't even hit rim, right, from three, right? But one of the biggest problems with NBA Live 16 happened there. I had no way of stopping the player's momentum, his forward momentum. So instead of stopping in the mid-range to shoot, I got carried out to the three-point line and ended up having to take a 25-footer with Derrick Rose, and obviously I missed it, and we ended up losing the game. But that player momentum with the movement, I think, is probably the worst thing about that game.
Definitely,
I think it's the thing that hurts the gameplay the most. Otherwise, yeah, you're right. I thought the game was fun. We had a couple nice alley-oops to Taj Gibson and Joakim Noah. There were some nice drives to the hoop with Derrick Rose, some acrobatic layups. He didn't have one dunk. That's fine. This is the 15-16 Derrick Rose. Jimmy Butler, how good was he on defense? Getting, stripping the ball, intercepting passes, helping us get out on the break, kind of like he did in real life. You know, we were trying to stretch the floor with Mirotić and Doug McDermott. Taj Gibson was kind of being a beast down low. Pau Gasol had a couple nice hook shots. Like, it was a fun game. And NBA Live 16 can really shine sometimes. And I think the game just looks great. I think you would agree. The graphics in that game are just, they pop.
And the faces, but we really did. Live 14, when they came back with Live 14, they look very last gen with their faces. There's a few that look pretty good, but others just look very, like, especially compared to 2K14, PS4 and Xbox One. So, but by Live 16, even Live 15, but certainly by Live 16, they had made the players look so much better, so much more what was then current gen.
Yeah, how about that Jordan Clarkson face?
Spot on, yeah.
It looks exactly like him. I also want to point out that the other thing that had us lose was the second biggest weakness in NBA Live 16. The defense being so much slower than the offensive.
Lateral player. Movement is a killer.
Lateral movement. And I have no lag on my end. And trying to stay in front of Lou Williams and Jordan Clarkson, because of their player momentum, the number one issue, and the number two issue, the slow lateral movement, it's the perfect storm for getting blown by the majority of the time and them easily scoring, right? So I have this thing I'm stubborn with. I always want to guard the ball. I feel like a human, if they're playing the video game, should always be trying to guard the ball.
It feels
right?
cheap,
like hand
otherwise,
down,
yeah.
Hand down, man down, as Mark Jackson would say. And my stubbornness, refusing to guard off ball, was a key contributor in us losing that game, because I kept trying to stick with Lou Williams, Jordan Clarkson, and Kobe, and I couldn't move laterally fast enough when they pushed forward in order to stay in front of them. So we ended up having to do this panic at the rim consistently, where we were trying to make up for the perimeter defender being beat.
And there's a delay there too. Dribble. When you jump for a block, there's a slight delay as well. Sometimes
there is.
Yeah.
Yep. There is. Sometimes it looks like the players are also jumping in slow motion, right? Like, you don't go up as quick as you want. But I think those are the two biggest issues with NBA Live 16. It's that crazy forward momentum that is incredibly exaggerated, and then the slow, kind of sluggish side to side movement where you feel like you can't guard the ball ever. But I thought we still had a lot of good plays. We actually put the shooting on rating instead of rating plus skill. And the reason is because Andrew, connecting via Parsec, living in Australia with his terrible internet. You don't care that I call it that. You admit it is terrible.
We know it.
Terrible internet.
We say it all the time. Yeah.
We say it all the time.
So I have a new computer, but the connection is the same. And the connection connection between the US and Australia has not changed. Yeah. My hardware has, but that hasn't. So,
right, but what it does is, by us putting it on rating, it makes it so Andrew doesn't have to be shy about shooting outside and worrying about timing his shot.
Yeah.
And it works out really well, because Andrew's connection isn't bad enough to where it spoils the experience for him.
It's playable.
It's like basically it's like online lag.
Yes.
Like that, and whatnot. And he's had to deal with that before. But I think that I think that works really well. So for those of you who live in areas that do not have great internet, or you're on poor Wi-Fi, but you still want to play on Parsec and play some Hoops games, I would recommend changing it from user timing to, you know, basically it depending on the rating only. So just only depending on the rating.
Absolutely. We do fiddle around with some of the settings sometimes. Sometimes we might play on a slightly lower difficulty setting, a notch down than what we normally would play on at the very least, because we do have that disadvantage of me having a bit of lag there. But it's about tuning the game for the most fun experience. I mean, we're not trying to be elitists on the sticks here. You know, we know what we can do playing locally, but playing over Parsec, we tweak things for the best possible experience, and we've had a blast with it, Derek. I know we say it a lot, but it has changed our gaming so much. And the fact that we can use the Xbox companion app, or I think it's just the Xbox app now, with your Xbox, connecting your Xbox to your computer, to Parsec, to my computer on the other side of the world, as I said before, mind-blowing. It should not work as well as it does, but I'm glad it does.
This is what dreams are made of,
yep.
Andrew. This is stuff it's we thought cool. about when we were... When we were younger, right?
So cool.
Sharing highlights, recording our gameplay, connecting with people from around the world on our favorite games or the games of our choosing in general. And we've been able to do that. We also played, like I stated prior, Cavs versus Warriors with Christmas Day jerseys. Mm. And that's where that LeBron highlight came from. That was in the top 10 plays of the week from NBA Live 16. And man, that Cavs team is so fun to use in video games during that time frame, because you have Kyrie, who's always going to be great at dribbling and his shot's great and whatnot, and you can do spectacular layups around the rim like I did. I think I did 3 or 4 of them in that during that session. But you also have LeBron, who is basically unstoppable going to the rim, and you can just throw it down constantly with him. You have J.R. Smith, who's basically just like an all around player in the video games at those times, because he can shoot threes, he can hit the mid range, he's throwing it down big and whatnot. So you have him, and then you have Kevin Love, who's helping you spread the floor and who can do post moves and all of that. It's just a lot of fun players on that team. And I think that we performed admirably with that Cavs team. And I think we used players kind of to their real life strengths and whatnot. Delly hit a super contested three in the corner that I was very proud of. You kicked it to me on the fast break and the defender closed out, but he still smoked that three. And then, you know, with the Warriors, they were playing very realistic. Steph Curry was taking some really tough threes and he was knocking them down consistently, and they were finding Klay Thompson in the corners or off screens, and he was hitting threes. And then Iggy came in and hurt us as he was attacking the rim. And then Sean Livingston turned into Michael Jordan in that game going to the rim, and he was destroying us. But I thought that that game resembled, you know, basically the Cavs versus Warriors
NBA basketball at the time. Absolutely. Yeah, no, that was a lot of fun.
It was really cool.
But we had similar problems in that game with momentum. This, as you say, these are problems with Live 16. And in the second game, in the Lakers-Bulls game, we were in control late, but having those problems, trying to defend on the perimeter, trying to defend at the rim with the delay in the controls, they got a couple of easy buckets that narrowed the gap and then allowed them to take the lead. And the same thing happened in the Cavs-Warriors game, because we were coming storming back and starting to take control of that game, but then the CPU started to bail itself out with some fouls, I'm just going to say it. So we were in those games and very competitive, but a couple of problems with the mechanics. Look, I'm not going to say we didn't make a few errors here and there, but look, it doesn't help when some of the mechanics are a bit wonky, and also when the CPU decides, okay, I'm just going to drive into the lane and bail myself out with a free throw. Oh, an and-one situation, why not? So that didn't help us. As you say, Livingston turned into MJ in that game, but we were in it, and if not for a couple of plays here and there, we would have won.
You probably noticed I preferred Mozgov in the game over Tristan Thompson.
Yes.
First off, I don't like Tristan Thompson. I'm not a fan of him. I've never been a fan of his game. I think he's wildly overrated, always has been. But I also wanted Mozgov in there for his size and length in order to try to combat those issues we were having, right? When, you know, the ball handler was easily getting by the defender on the perimeter, and then we had to, you know, make up for that. I thought Mozgov did pretty well for us, but it's really hard to make up for that many blowbys.
Yeah.
To be completely honest with you, I don't care if you have Rudy Gobert in the paint. It's very tough. But yeah, no, some good sessions on NBA Live 16, and I think that game and even NBA Live 15 as well, I think those could be standard parts of our rotation, because I think the gameplay is just, it sometimes shines. I think those games are fun.
Yeah, absolutely. We said it before that we seem to be expanding the repertoire. I mean, Live 10 has been a standard for us, obviously, and will continue to be so, because we still have a bunch of makeshift retro teams that we haven't tried out yet, which I'd love to try, and even some what-if scenarios, which would be fun as well. But yeah, we keep adding these new games to the Parsec sessions, and I love it.
So many games to play. So many avenues to play them. So it's just the perfect storm of awesome. I wanted to bring this topic up because we discussed it on the botched episode of the NLSC podcast, and we also asked the community what their thoughts were on this question. So, you know, you and I talked about Michael Jordan and players from the past that, you know, we loved watching, right? But we also wanted to discuss, you know, the players we enjoy watching in today's NBA, and we also wanted to hear your responses to that as well, and teams. You know, what teams are you enjoying watching and why? And I came up with a list myself, and I have 11 players that I could name right off the bat that I've really enjoyed watching in the 23-24 NBA season, and I also have four teams that I've enjoyed watching overall. But what about you? Who have you enjoyed watching this NBA season?
I mean, it's been hard to watch the Bulls, obviously, because they have struggled a bit. That they do seem to be pulling it together a little bit as of late. But being a Bulls fan, such a long-time Bulls fan, I will always support the team and watch them and take an interest in them. So seeing DeMar still, you know, still showing flashes of brilliance, and, you know, Zach LaVine has been out. That's unfortunate, and what remains to be seen what will happen with him. Seeing Coby White also play well this season has been pretty good, obviously, because once again, Lonzo Ball is out for the year. Remains to be seen whether he'll ever play again. At this point, I'm not even counting on that, so we'll see. But also love watching the Nuggets, obviously. Really enjoyed watching them in the finals last year. That has continued into this season. Jokic, just such a fantastic player to watch. Not spectacular in the flashy sense, but just the fundamental sense, much like a Tim Duncan, just watching him excel at basketball and be so fundamentally sound and but still make great passes, obviously. Jamal Murray, you know, seeing him come back and have that performance in the finals and that continue into this year has been fantastic as well. Wemby and the Spurs, obviously the Spurs not doing very well record-wise, but Wemby is such an anomaly, you know, that much size, but also having the ball-handling skills and the shooting, such an interesting player to watch. So those are some of the ones that stand out for me. Lots of great highlights, obviously, from Anthony Edwards as well. So, yeah, and of course, with the Warriors, Klay Thompson finally coming on, and people were saying, oh, got to trade him, got to get rid of him. And, oh, look, Klay Thompson's actually found his form again because he's actually a really good player.
All shooters go through slumps.
Yeah, yeah.
Bottom line, there is no perfect shooter. There's no shooter that shoots well every game. There's no shooter that shoots consistent every game. And you knew that he was going to come out of it, right? I mean, there's a chance he goes back into another slump. But, you know, he's still a good defender. He has great size as a defender at that shooting guard / small forward position, basically that wing position. He has that length. He, you know, takes pride on the defensive end, and he is overall a smart player. He's a champion, right? So I've always been a fan of Klay Thompson, and I'm glad that at this moment he's not in that slump anymore. So I'm going to go over some players that I've enjoyed watching. I've watched more NBA this season than I have in years. I have NBA TV always on. I've caught local Celtics games, quite a few of those as well. So first off, Anthony Edwards. I like his attitude, Andrew. I like his attitude towards the game. He came out last year talking about how much he hates load management, you know, kind of like in the similar vein of what Kobe said, you know, fans pay to come see me, you know, I should be available to play as long as I'm healthy and ready to go. He has a very appealing game. He's a super athlete, He has great dunks. He has powerful dunks, not just finesse. He has that mid-range game. He's got that little post fadeaway. He's got a sweet looking shot. He can put the ball on the deck. Like I enjoy watching Anthony Edwards. I think he's a two-way player, and I think he's going to be a winner. I can see Anthony Edwards being just a perennial all-star and being a winner in his career and being part of a lot of winning teams. So I know you mentioned Anthony Edwards. He's definitely a fun player to watch.
Yeah, and it's great to see these new stars emerging. In a previous show, we talked about, in fact, it was the last episode we did get, that did make it into the episode. That part wasn't botched by the recording. That the idea of the next face of the league, we have a lot of contenders, and people like Anthony Edwards, players like Anthony Edwards, are going to be in that discussion.
Absolutely. Also, the Timberwolves have the second best record in the NBA at 21-6 right now as we're recording this podcast.
Wild.
And
no one's ever coming.
Yeah, it is wild. And they're first in the West, so they're 21-6, and in second place it's the Thunder. How impressive is that for the Thunder, that young Thunder team? You know, they're 18-8. I also want to point out really quick before I move on to the next player that the AE1s, Anthony Edwards' signature shoe that got released by Adidas recently, I think it was on December 16th, is getting a lot of buzz, and it sold out within a couple days of its release. They're weird looking shoes. They almost look like those Christmas peanuts that you can get, like that the colorway at least that they promote the most, and the one that he wore in the first game that he wore those shoes. I think that I have this itch to pick them up. I think they're $120 and try them on. From the reviews that I've read on wear testers and other sites, they're the biggest weakness in them is that they're kind of heavy. And that sets off alarms for me, Andrew, because I'm a guard, a point guard, shooting guard. So I may still pick them up, but that worries me. So the next two players are actually play on the same team. So Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram. I think Zion Williamson, I don't care what you say about his weight gain. I honestly don't think he's fat or anything like that, like people are trying to say. I think he's obviously put on a little bit of weight, but he's still rugged and fast and still an amazing athlete. I think he is the most unstoppable player in the NBA in ISO situations going to the basket right now. He is ridiculous. They always have to throw a second or third defender at Zion Williamson when he starts to make his move towards the hoop. And he has some ridiculous finishes down there. I think that he's still one of the best athletes in the NBA, and his quickness in ball handling does not get enough credit for that, Andrew. I wish he would play harder on defense, like he stated when he was first coming into the league. He said that that was the thing he respected the most about Michael Jordan, was Jordan's defense. But he hasn't showed that, in my opinion, on the NBA level. He hasn't shown that dedication, so I hope that changes. And then Brandon Ingram. Brandon Ingram is a throwback. Brandon Ingram loves that mid-range game. He loves to get his back to the basket and fade over either shoulder. He likes to do the little tweeners in the lane and, you know, get in between the seams and then fade away. He's just a super fun player to watch offensively.
I don't want to make too many direct comparisons because this is where we get into the Phil Jackson, Steph Curry, Muhammad Abdul-Rauf comparisons that people really hated, but and ignoring the actual point he was trying to make. But with that being said, Zion Williamson kind of reminds me of Charles Barkley in that respect of being that kind of that thicker player and the undersized power forward, but just having that explosiveness and underrated ball handling abilities. There's obviously other things that Barkley was and did that I would say are better than Williamson and differences in their game, but there's some parallels there.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference between those two is the fact that Barkley had an incredibly reliable mid-range jumper. And I saw Barkley
And the
put in,
rebounding,
what,
yeah.
50 on the Warriors on mostly mid-range shots,
Yeah.
right? Where he was facing up Chris Webber and hitting shots right over him. Zion Williamson couldn't do that. He doesn't have a prayer to have a performance like that. He needs to be attacking the rim. He needs to get within 8 feet of the basket. He does not ha he's not has no confidence in his jump shot. So I think that that's a huge aspect of the game, right? That makes Barkley, who also could step out and hit threes, not at a high percentage, but he had to be respected out there at times. It makes Barkley a multi-dimensional scorer, and it made him a scarier offensive player, in my opinion. I also think Zion isn't close to the rebounder that Charles was.
True. People forget
he
how
depends
good
way too much
he was
on his leaping as opposed to what Barkley would do. Even though Barkley was a tremendous leaper, especially with the Sixers, Barkley knew how to use his body, and he would box out multiple players if he had to get that board. I think that Zion is a better ball handler than Barkley overall. I think that he's a little bit more crafty with that dribble, but sometimes keeping it simple is the way to go. And I think that Barkley was really good at that. So, but yeah, that shooting ability that Charles had, that fadeaway, that mid-range, you know, being able to step out to deep twos and whatnot, while still having that ability to throw it down, attack the rim, finish on contact, get offensive rebounds, tip-ins, etc. I think that really sets him apart.
Agreed.
From Zion. I also think that Barkley, especially in his Sixers years, was a far better defender than what you're seeing from Zion.
Mm.
Barkley was incredibly quick in the passing lanes, great hands, outstanding shot blocker, etc. So, yeah, that's my opinion on that. As far as other players, also, I want to point out the Pelicans, 17-12, Andrew, fifth in the West. So they are also performing well, and they got CJ back. So Donovan Mitchell's the next player. And Donovan Mitchell's really impressive because he's listed at only 6'3", and some have said he's shorter than that. And just his ability to stop on a dime and shoot threes right off of the dribble or off the hesitation, or like right off, like on the break, like just a quick pull-up three, and just how strong he is. He just super impressive. You know guards like that impressed me, like Baron Davis, right? How strong was Baron Davis? And that's the way I look at Donovan Mitchell. Is he's got the three level scoring, he's incredibly strong, he's also got great footwork, he's got that great pull up. Love watching Donovan Mitchell play. The next one, Jamal Murray. I think Jamal Murray might be the most underrated point guard in the league, and I think that he gets overshadowed by Jokic and just the fact that he's on that team. I think Jamal Murray is also probably top three playoff performers and clutch performers also, possibly in the NBA, not just at his position. You've seen what he's done in the playoffs. Such a steady game. He is a throwback point guard, in my opinion. He knows how to pick his spots. He's got solid floor vision, but never forces anything. Super clutch player. Love Jamal Murray.
Yeah, some fantastic players to watch. And it's great that they're getting some more attention. I mean, we still, it's very LeBron focused, obviously. And hey, look, yes, he's in his 21st year and still being LeBron, of course. But, you know, even back in the day, as much attention as there was on MJ, you still had that galaxy of stars. And I think you need to focus on more than just the one player, because otherwise you do get to those questions like, well, who's the face of the league? Does there need to be a face of the league? Can't there be, even if there is one face, there are still other stars that are fun to watch? And that's what made the regular season so fun back in the day that I remember, that on any given game, you would have these interesting matchups and these great stars to watch, and you would enjoy watching the other stars. You may still cheer for your team, but you still have those other stars that you enjoy watching. So, no, it's great to hear that you've got so many players around the league. I'm taking more of an interest, as I've said before. Even bought a magazine for the first time in a few years. They've gone up a lot. They're about $20 for a magazine. $20 used to get you a much better collector's edition magazine back in the day, but that's just inflation, I guess. Inflation, bro, as they told me when I brought up the virtual currency debate, but let's not get into that again. But no, lots of spectacular players and interesting situations with the NBA right now. Like the Timberwolves racing out to that lead. No one saw it coming. And of course, the Celtics. Your Celtics are playing well. You said, I think, before the season that you felt that this could be the year that they win a championship. If not this year, then when? How are you feeling about that now?
Yeah, I think Kristaps Porzingis, I said it before, as far as title hopes, as far as helping a contender, I think that Porzingis was the biggest and most important offseason acquisition in the league. He's perfect for Missoula ball. He's a stretch four / stretch five. He solves some of the rim protecting issues that the Celtics have had in recent years. As long as he's healthy and he continues to stay consistent as an offensive player and, you know, operates in the areas where he's comfortable, which is honestly in the high post and, you know, beyond the 3-point line, and he's not asked to do more than what his current skill set basically allows him to do, then he's just a tremendous help to the Celtics team. And Marcus Smart is not a loss. I said that right after he was traded. The reason is because Derek White and Drew Holiday are both excellent defenders and both better floor generals than him.
And shooters, so yeah.
They're shooters. But they're handling the ball, them two handling the ball is far more efficient and better than the team than Marcus for the team than Marcus Smart, who, in my opinion, was never a point guard. Was never somebody who should have high usage as a ball handler. And sure, he made positive impact on the defensive end, but you're getting that from Derek White and Drew Holiday on a nightly basis as well. But they give you the offense you need. So, yeah, I think Tatum and Brown seem to have matured. I still don't like the way they close out games. I think they've had some tough losses where they were up by double digits or almost double digits in the last 3 minutes of the game. And the team kind of gets cocky and lazy, and they stop fighting, and then they end up dropping games. But I think the Celtics have as good a chance as they've had in a long time to win a title this year. I'm just going to go over real quick just a few more players that I've enjoyed watching. So Steph Curry, he just hasn't aged, Andrew. He's strong. I still think he's the best ball handler overall in the league as far as point guard, shooting guard, the way he pushes the ball up the floor. Just the ball's always on a string. Still the best three-point shooter in the league. Westbrook, his aggressiveness, I love it. He accepted a bench role on the Clippers, and he seems to be thriving in that role, and they've won a lot of games recently with James Harden starting at the point. But Westbrook is still that guy who brings it 100% every game. This one might surprise you, Mo Wagner. So I guess it Mortiz Wagner is the way it's spelled, but his name is pronounced Movitz Wagner for the Orlando Magic. They ISO him a lot, Andrew, on the perimeter. And he is one of the most fun players to watch in ISO situations. If people don't watch Orlando Magic games, they probably don't see it that much. But if you have caught those games, he is really tough to handle in those ISO situations because he's tall, he's long, he can shoot, and he's a very underrated finisher under the rim. He's fascinating to me because he is not somebody you would expect to be put in those positions, and he's put in those positions night in and night out. And Orlando is—I want to say—they're 16-11, Andrew.
They're doing
one
well
of the surprises
too, yeah.
of the season for a young team. And Cole Anthony is over there balling out and whatnot. They are fourth right now in the East at 16-11, including 11-3 at home and 5-8 on the road. So they're feeding off of that home crowd. But yeah, he's super fun to watch. Jalen Brunson. I think that he is another throwback point guard. He is steady. He is an excellent shooter. He doesn't need to get, you know, a foot off the ground in order to impact the game in a positive way and score 30 points. He's unselfish. He is worth the money, right? He was worth the money that New York paid for him, which people scoffed at when he first went to that team. Wemby, like you said, it is fascinating trying to watch him figure it out. I think that some of the alley-oops that have been thrown to him where he catches it and throws it down where he barely leaves the floor, it looks stupid, Andrew.
Mm.
It doesn't look like it should be physically possible. It looks incredibly dominant. It's really cool to watch Wemby figure it out and just some of the things that he can do at his height. And then the last two are Banchero. Another Orlando Magic player, super underrated, 6'10", 250. He can do it all. Mid-range threes. He lowers his shoulder and attacks the basket really well. He is awesome for that team. And he's another guy who I consider kind of like a throwback player. He's kind of methodical in his movement, but he gets to where he wants. And I love his attitude. I love him as, you know, a player for that team. And then Bam Adebayo. Bam Adebayo is really interesting because he's a lob threat, but he also brings up the ball for that Miami Heat team sometimes. He can kind of play like point power forward or point center, depending on which position he's at. And you'll often see Bam kind of like pushing it on the break. He's blocking shots. He's making great passes. I think he's a super all-around player. I think that his offensive game isn't as diverse as a lot of other players at his position in the league right now, but he makes up for it by, you know, being a floor general at his position, you know, being able to block shots, being able to, you know, protect the rim, be a lob threat and whatnot. So Bam is obviously, you know, really fun to watch. And then for teams, the Timberwolves, the Celtics, as we mentioned, the Warriors, because I just love watching them try to figure it out. See if they can figure it out this season, see if they can get into the playoffs and make some noise. And then the Pelicans, because I really enjoy Zion, Brandon Ingram, Valanciunas, Zion Williamson. I really enjoy that Pelicans team.
Those are some great picks all around. And this is going to sound very hypocritical as a Bulls fan who loved their dominance in the 90s, but it is really fun. This decade has felt really wide open as far as who are the contenders and also who ends up winning the championship. It's been very wide open this decade. And that kind of parity we haven't always had in the league. And dynasties are fun and they are impressive. And obviously, once again, hypocritical because I was all for the Bulls' dominance when they're on top, and I wouldn't be complaining if they were on top and dominating again now. Not going to happen anytime soon, but there you go. But since my favorite team is not going to be dominant, hypocritically, I love how open the league is.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know who's going to win it this year. You have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, the Lakers and the Pacers and the in-season tournament, since that ended, as we're recording this podcast, I think the Lakers are 1-5 and the Pacers are 2-4 or something like that, or 2-5. So, those two teams are not looking, they're not looking strong. Yeah. I'm not a fan of the in-season tournament. I think that and hanging a banner for a regular for a tournament that's held during the regular season, that's silly. In LA, for the Lakers?
I heard Maz posted it. She posted it in the Discord. Apparently, there was pressure from the league to do it, which I think says it all. The league is really trying hard to...
Well, they're trying to push it. They're trying to promote it at all costs. But that should be a team decision.
Yeah.
Right? They shouldn't be pressured into doing that. And, like, I think it was Kobe that said that the Lakers, they raise banners...
Championships. Yeah, not division winners. Right. Yeah, even division. Right. And that's still an accomplishment, getting a division championship. You know, finishing the season, that's still an accomplishment in its own right, but that's not the Lakers standard. Yeah.
I think the Wolves and the Celtics have, as long as they stay healthy, have the perfect formula to win an NBA championship this season. And the reason is because I still think that size rules. Right? If you have effective size on your team, and the Timberwolves are kind of doing this old school thing a la David Robinson and Tim Duncan, where they have two big guys playing big minutes together and starting games together, Rudy Gobert and Karl Anthony Towns. And then they're also big in other spots. And Anthony Edwards is a big guard. He's built like a football player, Andrew. He's got those wide shoulders. He's rugged. He's super athletic. And then you look at the Celtics, and you got something kind of similar. You know, you got 7'3", 7'4", Kristaps Porzingis out there playing the four often, right? And then you got Al Horford out there. And then you got Jason Tatum, who I want to say is like 6'8", to 6'10". Right. You got Jaylen Brown out there, who's a big guard, another guy who looks like a football player. Like, size still rules. And you saw that in the bubble, right? When the Lakers won the championship with Anthony Davis out there and that Dwight Howard team and whatnot, and big LeBron James. You saw it when the Bucks won the NBA championship and it was Giannis and Lopez and that team. And then you saw Denver do the same thing. Denver wins the title with a big front line with Jokic and Aaron Gordon, who I want to say is 6'9", 6'10", and whatnot. They had size. Michael Porter Jr., how tall is he, Andrew? 6'10".
Yeah.
Right? So size is still king. So in my opinion, the Wolves and the Celtics have the best formulas as long as they stay healthy to make super deep runs and possibly, you know, maybe they face each other in the finals. And whatnot, and we see who wins that.
I do have a prediction I feel pretty good about, which is that we won't see a repeat of the 2005 finals. We're not going to see Spurs versus Pistons in these finals this year. I highly doubt that.
Oh my God. As of us recording this podcast, I think the Pistons have lost 25 in a row. So they're approaching the worst losing streak of all time. It's already worse than the Bobcats, Andrew.
Yeah.
So you know it's bad.
Those Bobcats were terrible. Worse than any. It's surprising, actually, that the longest streak doesn't belong to the 73-76ers, the ones that went 9-73. I would have thought they had it, but I guess they just managed to break up those losing streaks with those 9 wins. But yeah, they are going for a historically bad record. Apologies to Pistons fans. Apologies to Juicy Shackmeat. I know he's a listener, great member of our community, and of course a Pistons fan. Not a lot of fun at this time. And hey, I've watched some terrible Bulls teams, Derek. You've seen some Celtics teams that are kind of rough as well. So it's never fun when your team is struggling like that, but hopefully they will turn it around at some point. But before we move on to our mailbag topic, Derek, also rest in peace, Eric Montrose, former Celtics big man.
So when I heard that news, I had a flashback of watching Eric Montrose as a young player battle Orlando Shaq in the first round of the playoffs when we had Dominique Wilkins on that team. And Eric Montrose was actually a very promising rookie. He's a good rebounder. He averaged double digits, and we were a playoff team. And I say we because I grew up a Celtics fan and whatnot. I never had a problem with Eric Montrose, the player, and I guess he was one hell of a person as well. And most recently, he had been working with covering the Tar Heels.
Yeah,
I want to say
member of the
where he went to college.
Yeah, member of the '93 championship team, actually, against Michigan.
Yep, a hell of a college player, and he had been covering the Tar Heels and a commentator for the Tar Heels. I want to say for over a decade as well before his passing. Eric Montrose was part of some of the very memorable Celtics teams from my youth, and that is sad. He died of cancer.
Yes.
And I want to say he was only 52.
Yes, 52,
so
yeah.
And
as always,
old,
F cancer. I think we all say that, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I also want to point out, too, that I have a lot of fond memories of of the Celtics teams from the 90s. And, you know, a lot of Boston fans, they say that it was a very dark era. We didn't have as many winning teams. It was post Larry Bird, Robert Parrish, and Kevin McHale, at least after 91, 92, after Bird retired. And then McHale and Parrish departed shortly after. But I loved the fight in those Celtics teams. I love the personalities. I love the players. Lot of great memories watching those Celtics teams.
I mean, I liken that to those mid-2000s Bulls. Obviously, nowhere near the championship level, but having some pretty good runs and some impressive underdog runs with Ben Gordon and Kirk Heinrich and Lou Waldang, obviously, and Andres Nocioni. A lot of those players from the baby Bulls who stuck around and became at least a competitive team. Some parallels there, I feel. And you still cheer for those teams if you get behind them. They're not the most enjoyable runs, obviously, at the end of the year, but still some great moments, some great memories from those teams. I mean, I still remember Ben Gordon with that driving dunk against the Nuggets, same game that Tyrus Thomas made a putback at the buzzer to win that game. I remember watching that game live, actually. So, yes, you still get some great memories from years when your team is not as good.
It's fun rooting for the underdogs, right?
Sure.
Every time Andrew DeClercq would be wrestling for a rebound and he'd be successful getting it and he'd put it back in the hoop, you couldn't help but jump up and cheer for him, right? Like, it's the Andrew DeClercq's of the world and the underrated Tony Battee and players like that, you know, I enjoyed so much growing up watching. And, you know, watching Dino Raja finally come over to the NBA and, you know, bring the Celtics to, you know, being a pretty formidable team. And
respectability, absolutely.
Yeah, respectability and whatnot, and watching my favorite player at the time, D. Brown.
Of course, I was going to say, D was still there.
Yeah, he was still there. And, you know, watching all the things that he could do and him, you know, at one point even becoming the face of the team and them leaning heavily on him and watching him try to be that guy. It's just, there was just a lot of fun could be had rooting for the underdog team and just the underdogs on the team, right? So I enjoyed it.
So we have a lot of great memories, obviously, of underdog teams, and we're enjoying this season. We're we're not just grumpy old men, Derek. We are enjoying the current game as well. We have players we still love watching. And we're not alone in that respect. We have responses to that question that you put out a couple of weeks ago. Once again, we did miss last week's show and lost the latter half of the show before that. So we are circling back to those responses. And we'll get to those now. And Stephen, the Live King, says Tyrese Halliburton, Tyrese Maxey, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
So Live King is a huge Pacers fan. That's his team. And I know that he's loved what he's seen out of Tyrese Halliburton this year, who's taken the next step, right? And he's being marketed a lot as well. There's just a bunch of features going on with him on NBA TV, and they're conducting interviews with him and doing specials on him and all of that stuff. It's nice to see a player like him who is – he's averaging a lot of points, but he is kind of a flashy floor general, right?
And without the turnovers as well. He's great.
And without the turnovers, yeah. He plays the game the right way. He's a very consistent shooter, even with that ugly form, that Magic Johnson-esque form that he has. And it's really cool to see that team being led from that point guard position from a guy who, even though he scores a lot of points, is kind of a traditional playmaker. And you mentioned SGA. And I want to point out that what's really interesting about him is – the areas in which he operates, which analytics would tell you that he's making bad decisions.
Analytics.
Right. he is in that high post. He's in that low post. He's taking mid-range fadeaways. He's taking quick mid-range pull-ups. He's pump faking on the three, stepping in and taking the mid-range shot. He's smooth around the rim and everything. He leads that Thunder team. And as we talked about before, they are a huge surprise this year. And he's a guy, because of his skill set and his steadiness, that you can absolutely build around. So yeah, he's been fun to watch as well.
And next up we have Mike MP3, a longtime member of the community, of course, as is the Live King, says, I could watch Anthony Edwards all day, and the T-Wolves have been good to watch. The Jazz are also a team I don't mind watching. Fox, Murray, and Sabonis have me watching a lot of the Kings too.
So the Wolves are fun to watch also because they have Mike Conley, right? And remember I talked about that perfect formula to kind of be a contender, to be able to truly contend for a championship. And I think one of those pieces is having a solid floor general, which is why I never thought that the Celtics under Marcus Smart's point guard reign had a chance, right? Because I think that there's too many botched offensive possessions. They're too slow getting into their offense, et cetera. I think that Wolves team overall from top to bottom has the pieces, if they stay healthy, to be a contender. And he mentions Anthony Edwards. I just love watching him play basketball. And he mentions the Kings. Not my favorite team to watch. I think that De'Aaron Fox is a heck of a player. I think that Sabonis has solidified himself as an all-star caliber player. I've just never been a really big fan of Harrison Barnes' game. Overall, I think he's too inconsistent. I think that team does not have enough still to truly compete. I think right now in the standings, the Kings are, let's check, the Kings are 17-10. But do you look at that Kings team as a team that's going to make noise in the playoffs? I don't. I think they're still an early exit.
Yeah, competitive, but probably not. I wouldn't pick them to go too far, no. Next up we have 707, says, favorite players this year, Steph Curry, Luka Doncic, and Tyrese Halliburton. Teams, Warriors, by default, he's from the Bay Area. Nuggets, always enjoy the passing of Jokic. And Celtics, JT is his fourth favorite player this year.
He likes the point guards, the first three names that he mentioned, Curry, Halliburton, and Doncic.
And they're fun to watch, yeah.
High usage, great ball handlers, floor generals, right? Yeah, and nice to see that he mentions the Celtics in there as well. I think that sometimes I'm curious with 707. I wonder if he's a point guard in real life. I think sometimes the way you play impacts your favorite players to watch, right? So I'd be curious if he is a point guard.
Next up we have Roger Ward, one of the Live 01 legends, of course. Another vote for SGA, Jokic, Jimmy Buckets, Love Garland, that's Darius Garland, of course, as my Homer pick.
Yeah, he's a Cavs fan. Jimmy Buckets, he's a two-way player, solid player. I have nothing wrong with Jimmy Butler. What was your opinion of him on the Bulls? You being a huge Bulls fan, were you sad to see him go? Were you a fan?
Yeah, I was sorry to see him go. I mean, the trade, they at least got some value back for him, obviously, which was not something that Garpax did very well very often. If you can't trade your best player, a reigning all-star, and get something in return, you are truly a failure as a general manager, as a vice president of basketball, whatever, as an executive, shall we say. I was sorry to see him go. There were a couple of times when he made some comments or seemed to be a bit, I don't know, this is an overused word, toxic in certain situations, and he seemed to be bouncing around a little bit and alienating teammates. And I thought, is he really a leader? And I think he has a leader's mentality without a leader's skill set, to be honest. I'm not sure that a team, I mean, it sounds ridiculous to say when he's actually made a couple of finals with the Heat, but I don't think he's ever going to be that guy who leads a team to a championship, at least without a lot more help than he has. So maybe it is a bit unfair to put it all on him. I am a fan of him, though. I have come around. I think he was the victim of some unfortunate PR, some bad PR that he didn't deserve. I fell for it. I'll put my hand up there and say I fell for that. But no, it does seem like a honestly a stand-up person and certainly a great player. But yeah, I'm not sure that he would have been the player to lead the Bulls back to the promised land.
I think he's a good leader, and I think that the only people that who have played with him that don't think he's a good leader are soft.
Have character issues themselves, yeah. No,
Yeah, have character
yeah,
issues
sure.
themselves. They're emotional, possibly. They're not used to a player like Jimmy Butler who speaks his mind and calls things out the way that he does. I don't think that the Heat have been good enough to reach two finals recently. I think that's crazy. I don't think that their roster, top to bottom, has been deep enough to do that talent-wise. But I also think that that speaks to the league not being super strong, like the East not being super strong during that time. And at the same time, I also think it speaks to Eric Spoelstra being a genius as a coach.
Indeed, yeah.
I think that Spoelstra does a great job of connecting with his players. I think that they take incredibly well to him, that they listen to him. And I think that he helps that team get over the hump more often than not.
Next up, we have Royce says Nuggets, Clippers, and Celtics. I always check scores and stats if I miss the games or highlights. I want to see how Jokic and Denver are doing. How does Harden fit in with Kawhi, PG, and Russ? And the Celtics look amazing this year. I also like Dallas with Doncic and the team. And I think Doncic has been pretty popular since he got into the league. And I mean, yeah, you can relate to enjoying how the Celtics are doing.
Yeah, he mentions the Clippers, and I just want to say that it's being blown out of proportion, the success that they're having right now with Harden at point guard, and he's had a recent string of good games, and the team has a good record recently with him playing that role. That's not success yet, Andrew. That's not playoff success. This is all fun and games right now, but what happens when we do get to the playoffs? Do we see a repeat of what's happened in the past with James Harden?
Absolutely,
Do
yeah.
we, the feuds that he's had with players, like the mix-up that he had with Chris Paul, where they were clearly irritated with each other
The poor shooting,
during
yeah.
that series. Yep, exactly. So let's pump the brakes a little bit on praising Harden, and let's not forget, what's happened over the course of his career, because of his play style, because of him not taking care of his body at times, because of his kind of selfish attitude, the same attitude that, in my opinion, got Kevin McHale fired when he was the head coach of the Houston Rockets and whatnot. So, I'm not a fan of Harden's game. I never have been. I haven't been a fan of his personality. And while I hope Russell Westbrook does well, and I like Paul George, and I'm a fan of Kawhi Leonard, and for those reasons, I do hope that the Clippers perform. I think that at the end of the day, there's going to be too many people that want the ball. And I think that James Harden is going to, James Harden and Paul George's inconsistency is going to be what tears that team down and makes it so they don't compete for a championship. That's my opinion.
No, I agree. And as far as Harden goes, I mean, he has that reputation, and you don't shed a reputation like that until you prove those people wrong, and until you actually win. Obviously, ultimately, is the way you shed that reputation. Otherwise, you can't just say, "Oh, they're haters." That reputation is there for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. Wait until he does something that is significant, that, with the Clippers in like an important game, right? I'm not saying that regular season games aren't important, but we need to see what this team does in the playoffs, right?
When elimination
before
is on
we
the line.
Crown
Yeah.
James
Yeah.
Harden as a savior.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, there's just a lot of people right now in the media, fans and whatnot, that are crowning James Harden as a savior just because of this short stretch.
It certainly is interesting, if nothing else, whether it blows up or whether it succeeds. Unless you're a Clippers
Right.
fan, you know. Shout out to Dime Dropper, of course. Great basketball mind on X.
A true Clippers fan, by the way.
Absolutely, yeah.
He's always been
Pat,
a Clippers
and Pete
fan.
Up as
He
well.
does a great
Yeah.
job. He does a fabulous job, an excellent job of covering that team. I've seen some of his interviews with fans. I've seen some of his Locked On Clippers that he does and whatnot. He is a true basketball fan and a true Clippers fan.
Love to see it. Last response from Twitter here, or X, if you will. Ricky says, came in late this season, skipped the in-season tournament, but really love Jaime Jaquez Jr. on the Heat. And as for the team, he says, surprisingly, the Bulls.
Yeah, and I heard he's actually third right now in Rookie of the Year voting. So that's good. That's pretty exciting. Behind, obviously, Wemby and Chet Holmgren. The Bulls are another sort of train wreck, Andrew. Like kind of like the Warriors, that are kind of fun to watch because you're trying, you're like seeing if they can figure it out, right? You're like, are these pieces, for the Warriors is Curry, Clay, and then, if Dre ever gets back, can that core still win it, with Looney and whatnot? And then with the Bulls, is it blow it up time, or is it can DeRozan, Vucevic, and then the disgruntled Zach LaVine, et cetera, figure it out? And then obviously like the young core with Patrick Williams and whatnot. So like, I think that those two teams are fascinating to watch for the same reasons. The difference is that the Bulls have not had success
Yeah.
with those pieces, and the Warriors have four championships.
Exactly.
So
yeah,
there's a big difference there.
I have a feeling that LaVine will be moving on fairly soon. It just seems
absolutely.
It just seems that way. Yeah. Heading over to Facebook for a response before we head over to Discord. Ron says the T-Wolves, Celtics, and Rockets, and as far as the Rockets, only because of Alpha and Şengün.
People calling him Baby Jokic, because he has a similar game, almost like he's like a poor man's Jokic, I guess. He is interesting to watch. He doesn't rely at all on like leaping ability. I do want to say once again, though, that in my opinion, coordination and footwork do have to do with athleticism. So you can't call him unathletic, right? He's still an athletic center. He just doesn't jump high, but he's a good passer like Jokic. He has those little like 1 foot fadeaways, Dirk style, and little hook shots, little flip shots around the rim. He's had some impressive dunks on contact. I like him as a player, but he's not like Jokic can be your best player and you can win an NBA championship. I think he is like he's got to be your fourth best player, right? On a championship team, fourth or fifth. So that's the way I look at that.
Well, they call Harold Miner Baby Jordan. That didn't work out so well.
Well, the thing is that the Harold Miner thing never made sense to me because I never thought his game, outside of just being able to...
A dunker, yeah.
Yeah, be a great dunker. Like, I never thought he resembled Jordan at all. He never had the cat-like quickness, right?
Well, wasn't
he was
it
never
the
shooter.
The saying was, like, anyone who could walk and chew gum and was a shooting guard was kind of compared to MJ at one point.
I think the league wanted the next Jordan at that point.
Yeah.
Right? I think the league during the mid-90s was looking for that next face.
Well, I got Kobe at least.
The league. And then we got Kobe, right. But then at the same time, the league just got flooded with talent, right? We got Kobe, and then then they were focusing on Iverson, and then there was obviously Shaq, and then we had Tim Duncan, and then Kevin Garnett, and then Dirk Nowitzki. And, Karl Malone was still in the league, and he was still putting up numbers. And then, you had – there were so many – exciting players in the late 90s and early mid 2000s. Like I could go all day naming just awesome players from those time frames.
I think the worst comparison might have been I think it might have been NBA DraftNet or Draft Express. I forget which one. I think it was DraftNet. Compared Deshaun Stevenson to Michael Jordan, that may be the worst.
Yeah,
it's up there.
That's even worse than Harold Miner, because Stevenson could never jump like that.
Exactly.
Right. He was never the dunker. He was never a great dunker.
He's in a dunk either. One dunk contest and didn't do that.
How can
well,
you yeah. even? I don't even. That's terrible.
Yeah, the 2001 dunk contest was kind of iffy. Although Desmond Mason did have a great showing.
Yeah, Desmond Mason was. That's the he went under the leg.
Yes.
In that dunk contest, yeah, he was a ridiculous leaper.
And finally, we have Juicy Shaq Meat over on the NLSC Discord. Three favorite players this season: Tyrese Halliburton, Austin Reeves, Donovan Mitchell, and teams: Indiana Pacers, Minnesota Timberwolves, and Cleveland Cavaliers. And also adds, sadly, I got bamboozled around the first four games of the season, thinking my Detroit Pistons were finally going to turn it out. Crying emoji. And yeah, certainly my condolences there. My Bulls not doing a whole lot better, at least they're certainly mediocre. Mediocre is not that much more fun than bad. At least you'll get a draft pick out of it, I suppose. But as I said, I've been there with my team, my favorite team, the Bulls, doing very badly.
That kind of happened too with the Wemby. With the Spurs early on, there was like an early win or two, and people were like, "Oh, Wemby's going to turn this franchise
around."
It's
going to be like Duncan, yeah.
It's going to be like Duncan and David Robinson, and they're going to be just ridiculous in his first year. And where are they sitting, Andrew? They're last in the West, and they're 4-23 right now.
Well, Duncan Robinson had better teams around them for a start. Also, I mean, Duncan had Robinson and Sean Elliott, so
right. They didn't have Jeremy Sochan screwing up.
No.
All the time. I'm not a fan of him as a player. I do not think he's a point guard. I don't know what Pop is thinking with that, but he handles the ball way too much for that team. But yeah, the Spurs don't have the pieces right now to compete, and you can't put that on Wemby.
So thank you to everybody who responded to that question. Once again, we're sorry we missed your responses the first time around, but glad we could circle back to it, Derek, because the listener participation this year has just been fantastic, and we love having that interaction with the community.
Absolutely. And we have another mailbag question, and this is what we're going to end the show with. And, you know, for the sake of time, Andrew and I are only going to go over our favorite holiday gift memory in relation to basketball and our basketball video games. And then we're going to get to your responses. But I asked the community, what are some of the most memorable holiday gifts you received in the past in relation to basketball and or basketball video games? So why don't you kick this off, Andrew? What is the most memorable gift you ever received in relation to basketball and or basketball video games?
You know, I reflected on it. I think we reflected on it last year as well. And I said that 1996 was a big basketball Christmas for me, getting the Michael Jordan basketball that I've never used. It's still there as a collectible. And also, I think might have got a couple of games. I know I got the NBA Jam Session board game, which I need to cover for Way Back Wednesday at some point. But I'd forgotten that the Christmas before that, the Christmas 2 years before that, 1994, was still getting into basketball and really got it back into basketball over the next couple of years after MJ made his comeback, obviously. But 1994 was when I got my first basketball and proper hoop outside. So, yeah, for the backyard. So I think that was one of my most memorable basketball gifts over the years. And I'd forgotten that I got that for Christmas 94.
And the rest is rec league history, folks.
That's right.
No, that's awesome. And it's funny how that worked with you, because it's the same way as it was with me, is that combination of enjoyment on the virtual hardwood and real basketball, right? When I wasn't playing, you know, NBA Live in the mid-2000s or NBA in the Zone 2, et cetera, where was I, Andrew? I was out at the park playing basketball, or I was out in my driveway playing on my hoop. And those are some of the fondest memories I have as a kid. So for me, it's NBA Fast Break 98. I've said this on a prior episode. When we got that for Christmas, you know, for our PlayStation 1, we thought that the graphics couldn't get any better, Andrew.
Of course.
The players were running out of the tunnel, and we looked at Ron Mercer, and we're like, that looks exactly like Ron Mercer. We just couldn't believe how great.
I mean, more so than previous games. To be fair.
Right, exactly. And for those who don't know, obviously, that is technically the first 2K. That game was developed by Visual Concepts and whatnot. But yeah, we played so many exhibition games on that game, not even jumping into a season, just putting all the different teams on the floor, looking at all the players' faces, thinking that it can't get any better, loving the gameplay, loving the, you know, the dunks around the rim, the way shooting felt, the player introductions. Then when we got into the season mode, we had all the stat tracking and everything. We loved the soundtrack. We were just blown away. I've never been more floored by a basketball game on my initial impression than we were on Christmas with when we got NBA Fast Break 98. We were also incredibly blown away when we first played the NBA 2K for Dreamcast. So technically, like the original NBA 2K, just those visuals, the way the action looked on replays, you know, Barkley backing into the paint and you seeing his face and it looking exactly like Charles Barkley. But going back to the Christmas gift thing, it was NBA Fast Break 98 for PS1. That is my most fond memory related to basketball as a gift on the in the holiday season.
And of course, you know, you played with your brothers still to this day, obviously, but you were also doing that growing up. The Christmas holidays for me are the end of year holidays, because of course summer is at the end of the year here in the Southern Hemisphere. So the end of the school year also coincides with Christmas. That is the longest break, 5 or 6 weeks usually, of school holidays. So my cousin would come down for many weeks at a time, not just the 2 weeks during the year, not just the 2 weeks for the end of term holidays, but the end of the year holidays being 5 or 6 weeks was usually here for most of those 5 or 6 weeks. So we got a lot of basketball gaming done. So the Christmas holidays were always special for that.
Yeah, and I think that being able to share that experience on Fast Break 98 with my brother Nick, it made it incredibly special. And the fact that, you know, he would jump on the court with the Spurs and I would jump on the court with the Pistons. And I loved using that team because it was Stackhouse and Grant Hill and I could fly to the rim with both of them. I also had Joe Dumars on that team to stretch the floor. Super fun team. His favorite player at the time was David Robinson. So he loved going to his go-to move in that game and doing stuff with him. Just sharing that experience with him was just, it meant the world. And that's kind of how you felt with your cousin Clinton. It's the shared experiences are always better.
I mean, I put it in a Monday tip-off. Two hoop heads or more are better than one.
Oh, 100%.
So we do have some responses in the Discord to this question. So, Derek, it is time to open up the mailbag.
To the mailman. The pump fake. What an unbelievable dunk.
And first up we have NBA Live Dude says, I was about 16, if I can remember, when Xbox dropped, and I never asked for anything since I felt I was older and didn't want to be a burden, but out of nowhere, I get an Xbox with a DVD playback kit and a copy of NBA Live 2002. I read the manual on the way home and the entire box in the car. I ended up buying Inside Drive a few months later and was even more floored. Not really childhood, but teen memories stick out more because I literally felt like the graphics were amazing since I kind of fell out of gaming for a few years. I still own that same Xbox and it works. Such a special system. And yeah, when you still have your original systems and that original copy of the game, I do still have some of my original copies, quite a few actually, and original consoles. Yeah, that's really cool, and I love that. And that's what we used to do. We'd read the manual in the box in the car on the way home.
I was about to say, what a special experience it was to get your hands on that physical copy of the game, turn the game around, and just read the text of them hyping up the game, telling you about all the new animations that have been added, the stat tracking, the different modes. You get to see screenshots of the game on the back of the box, and then you open up the game and you open up the manual and it tells you even more. And you look at the manual art, because sometimes they were doing some fun things with those manuals. For example, on College Slam, if I remember correctly, because I still have the physical copy somewhere around here, you open up the manual and it has like all the college team logos on each page and whatnot. And I want to say it's like surrounding the corners of the manual. Just so many cool things about looking at the box art and the manuals. And in my opinion, it's just a super lost art, right?
It is, yeah.
We used to look forward to that stuff. But yeah, Xbox is a great console. I love the fact that he mentioned NBA Inside Drive, because I think NBA Inside Drive 2002 through 2004 are super underrated basketball video games. And it's too bad that they didn't come out also on PlayStation so more people could enjoy them.
As we've said before, that is the problem with those console exclusives. There were some really great games, but when they were console exclusive, they didn't get that market share, and they went away.
Yeah, it's super unfortunate because the things they were doing with the Inside Drive series from a unique gameplay perspective, from a stat tracking perspective, which was actually better than 2K and Live at the time. It is too bad.
We will have to see what 2024 brings. But John Z1, the creator of the amazing NBA Jam Legends on Fire Edition mod and also the 2023 roster update for NBA Jam on Fire Edition, says, I haven't thought about this in a long time, but it was awesome. When I was in 6th or 7th grade, I badly wanted a Sega Nomad, a Sega portable that played Genesis cartridges, and against all odds, my parents got me one. I was a big arcade player and obsessed with NBA Hangtime and Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3, and my parents got me both of them, although I think Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3 wasn't for Christmas. I played so much Hangtime on that thing. Great system, great gift. And I actually got a Nintendo 64 with NBA Hangtime for my birthday, 13th birthday, in 1997. So, yeah, Hangtime is a classic.
NBA Hangtime, for me, might be the second or third best arcade basketball video game of all time.
It's up there, yeah.
The fact that in the mid-90s this was released, and you could do dribble moves, like you could do that spin move. Just defense mattered, and you could truly play defense, which it's really hard to do on games like NBA Showtime, NBA on NBC, and NBA Hoops. It's so fun to block shots at the rim. It's fun to play co-op. It's fun to play against the computer, solo and whatnot. Like, that game, really, from an arcade basketball gameplay experience perspective, really has no weaknesses, in my opinion. So I love that he brought that up. I love NBA Hangtime.
And finally, we have Juicy Checkmate says, this just happened on Christmas Day last year when my wife gifted me NBA 2K23 for a Nintendo Switch. We celebrated the holidays at her provincial home, so it was the last place I'd expect to receive such a gift. As we went back home 2 days after, I loaded the game to try the new features and update the online content. Despite the faults of last year's installment, I was still able to find many ways to enjoy it, mostly my team content, as I played regularly until early this August. And that is awesome, obviously, and shout out to your missus for getting you a basketball gaming-related gift. And I know, was it last year or the year before that your missus got you a Super Nintendo Mini?
Yeah, lucky guy. That's awesome. No, she got me actually the official Super Nintendo.
Oh, that's like, right, yes.
Not the Mini.
The original console, that's right, yes.
Yeah, she got me the original console, even a better. Couple controllers, and a bunch of games. She also got me an NES in the past as well, like the original system, controllers, games, Double Dribble again, etc. So she also got me Hoops, if you remember correctly.
That's right.
That game from that was on the NES. So I got that from her as well. So no, that's awesome. And I have similar experiences, and it means the world when that happens.
So thank you once again to all of those responses. Great to get these Christmas memories. And you know, this is a special time of the year. Sometimes it's a difficult time of the year for some. You know, thoughts go out to everybody. Best wishes to everybody at this time of the year. And yeah, hopefully you are enjoying the holiday season as we are.
Yeah, and we wish well to you and your families, and we hope that you're enjoying the holiday season, however you celebrate. And we thank you for celebrating with us. It means a lot to us.
Absolutely. Once again, great participation throughout the year. Very kind comments about the show. A lot of people tuning in each and every week. Not last week, obviously, but we had a chance to catch up on some of our back catalog, and we always encourage you to do that. We have, obviously, over 500 episodes now. Hit that 500th episode just this year, Derek. That was a great celebration, and plenty more fun to come in 2024. Not just the podcast, but also the videos, articles, some video essays will be coming as well on YouTube. Lots of fun stuff, even some mods, I'd say.
The fun doesn't end just because a new year is upon us. We plan on having the creator of Hoopland from Quality Game on the NLSC podcast and a few other guests. The top 10 is going to continue throughout 2024 and beyond. We have a bunch of gameplay videos we're going to be uploading from various games for basketball history, and maybe even some more from the present title and whatnot. And, you know, we look forward to seeing what you're playing. You know, and we love seeing your clips on X. We love seeing your clips on the Discord. We love when you share those YouTube videos with us. So, yeah, there's a lot more to come.
Absolutely. So join us on the NLSC, on the Discord, on the site, on social media through 2024 and beyond. With that being said, that has brought us to the end of this week's show, the last show for 2023. As always, we thank you for tuning in and invite you to join us again next week, either on the NLSC, nb-live.com, our YouTube channel, or your podcast app of choice. In the meantime, please connect with us on social media. That's where you can get in touch with us. And of course, stay up to date with all of our content. So Derek, go ahead and plug the handles.
You can reach me on X at D43G and at D4384. I'm on YouTube, D43, and on the NLSC, D43.
I am Andrew in the forum and Andrew NLSC on X. The NLSC is on X and Facebook at the NLSC. We're also NLSC Basketball on Instagram and Threads. We're on YouTube at youtube.com/NBLiveSeriesCenter. And of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, NB-Live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. So, thank you once again for tuning in all year long. And until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Merry Christmas, everyone.